Welcome to Care in Action, the podcast by Care Austria, with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
Hi everybody, another episode of Care in Action, our weekly podcast. Today I'm very delighted to welcome Apollo Gabasira. Apollo, hi.
Hi Andrea, happy to be here today.
Yes, I'm glad to have you. Apollo is the country director of Care International in Uganda. CARE has a long-standing presence in the country, working to address the root causes of poverty, vulnerability, and social injustice with a strong focus on women and girls like we always have. Our appreciated listeners know that. Under Apollo's leadership, CARE International in Uganda advances programs in climate justice, livelihoods, resilience, inclusion, and humanitarian response. So we'll right jump into our conversation. And before we take a deeper dive into the work of CARE, I want to know, how did it come that you're working in development? And how did it come that you work with CARE, Apollo?
Interesting question, Andrea. Thank you very much. How did I end up in development and with CARE? Well, let me start by saying, after college, when I came back home and started looking at jobs, the first people that took me up were private sector accounting companies, the big four as we called them then. But then CARE knocked a few days before I started my job with PricewaterhouseCoopers then. And it was clear that my passion was in dealing with systems that would resolve poverty. Andrea, I was born in Uganda. I was born in poverty, around poverty. I've seen this, and I was fascinated by why my country, us, were like that and not others. So naturally, I was pulled to a job that would do development, that would fix, as I would have wanted to call it then, would fix poverty, as opposed to becoming an accountant. How did I end up in CARE? I think you'll be interested to hear this story, I hope.
Yeah.
In primary two, many years ago, in the post Idi Amin era, CARE gave us books and a small ball. I was 6 years then. And that book had the word CARE written on it. It was the emergency support to Uganda after Idi Amin had been overthrown. So if there is an NGO that is imprinted in my head, it's CARE. And when it called for me, it was like, what a coincidence. This is what I saw those many years ago. The rest is history. I'm here. I've grown from the officer I was when I entered in 1999 to the country director I am today. Thank you.
So nearly 30 years of CARE. So I can't compete with that because I have 17 years.
Whoa.
With CARE, which also is a long time. So, dear listeners, so you see, many of us have good reasons why we are working at CARE and why we have been attracted to join this global international organization. And the man we are meeting today in this podcast, Apollo, is another example that there are very good reasons that he's working with CARE and not with somebody else, which he also could have done. So I'm really glad to have you. And I'm always highlighting that CARE is focusing very strongly on women and girls. So if we talk about a moment now about the situation of women and girls in Uganda, I mean, I had the privilege to visit Uganda several times. And as a foreigner who has not spent a lot of time in the country, I would say there are quite a lot of strong women, not only in Uganda. Yeah. What is your take on it? What comes to your mind first when you think now, today, about the situation of women and girls in Uganda overall?
Thank you, Andrea. It's an interesting dichotomy, if I may say. On one hand, Uganda has made incredible progress in the gender equality space. Quick examples for us. The Speaker of the Parliament of Uganda today is a woman, pretty, powerful, competent, able lady. our former vice president in this country is a woman. If I look at agencies like CARE, my predecessor here was a woman. When I look at the team I have around me, even as a man, the majority of staff, the majority of senior staff in this agency I lead are women. That tells you something, that there has been progress over the years in terms of women empowerment in the professional space. They've taken up their spaces on the table and they are leading. They're just not there doing work, Andrea, but they are leading. So there
you're
has
talking
been
about
progress.
Meaningful
work. Right? Yes, meaningful participation. They have voice. They have everything that comes with that whole gambit of empowerment. So on one hand, it's pretty positive. On the other hand, Andrea, is still vulnerability. As an African, as a Ugandan, as someone who is rural, someone who is working in development, can't sit here and say the job is done. There is still so much work to do. There is disempowerment. There are cultural dynamics we are dealing with. So the straight, simple answer to that question is very positive on one hand, and I wake up every day and thank whoever has driven that progress, myself, agencies like CARE, yourselves, God, the governments, and all that. But on the other hand, I'm saying there is still incredible work to be done. There is still need. There is still vulnerability. There are girls being born into condemnation of a life of poverty, not because they had to be, but just because they are women. So, yes, that's the dichotomy I see in before us today.
You shared with us now all the stakeholders of our lives very, very nicely. I really like that. What would you say? Has it to do with urban living and rural living, or is it not? Of course, it's not guaranteed that if you are born as a girl in a big city in Uganda, like Kampala, then of course it's not guaranteed that you have an equal life, but are the chances better than if you would have been born in the rural landscape somewhere?
Yes and no. No, because there is an overriding factor that is influencing vulnerability, Andrea, and that's culture. That's the culture that we are born in, that we are bred in, that is surrounding us, that a woman is condemned to a certain position in society. They are below a man. They are born to less power. They are born to that belief. So there is that as a big driver. On the other hand, there is reality to what you say, that if a woman is born in rural Uganda, there are more vulnerabilities there. The culture that I'm speaking to that is regressive is deeper in that context than in urban Uganda in Kampala, where I'm sitting today. There is more exposure here. There is a mixture of culture here. This is a cacophony of culture. Ugandan, Kenyan, Tanzanian, even Western culture here on TV, the community of experts. So there are chances of you getting exposed to the other positive side that drives vulnerability of women towards empowerment and in a positive direction as opposed to rural. Rural has the purity of culture that is very oppressive.
Mm-hmm. We can imagine that. And who is more difficult to convince? Is it the women themselves that are pushing hard, the educated women, or also the access to meaningful education is something already that is not given in many places in the world where we work, and I assume also so for Uganda? Are the women pushing themselves, or is there an understanding in society and also in the male part of society that at least from an economic standpoint, it makes a lot of sense to empower women, and that also women generate income and contribute to the household? Is that the side that is convincing people? Because from the rights-based view, we talk a little bit later, what would you say? Is it the women or the men who think it's practically that I have an educated wife who is also contributing to the household income?
I think it's women, to be completely honest, that understand the potential that unlocking, I mean, economic empowerment and opportunity, if I may call it, they very clearly understand the potential to unlock themselves that brings to them. So for me, I'm seeing more and more women voicing for that, pushing for that. But on the other hand, Andrea, we have a community of men that understand that you'd rather have an educated, an empowered woman. So you're co-sharing, there is co-support, there is co-lifting in terms of your household issues, in terms of your day-to-day living, in terms of raising school fees for your children, as opposed to keeping power alone as a man and suffering with all that load and the consequences that brings. And many more men are understanding, Andrea, the after effects of the stressful life an African man lives. It's disease, it's bother, and it's a troublesome old age. So again, we go back to that dichotomy I spoke about, that in every conversation gender, you see almost two sides or even more. So here there is the women saying, we'll push our case and we'll show that if we can do ABCD, the world is much better for us and for the world and for everyone. But also men, there is an emerging community of men that just get this. I'd rather, Andrea, have my wife employed. I'd rather even be in a situation where I'm the one at home and Lillian, my wife, is working. I think that would give me peace. Would I support that now? Yes. Would I encourage my son to do that, Peter? Absolutely. And I'm seeing more and more men of my generation and that behind us understanding that, clicking, that power can be a problem. Power for us is increasingly becoming a burden. Let the women come into play. And I hope then, going back to your rural urban dynamic, I hope that that emerging school of thought and thinking gets shifted to our rural peers, so that my rural peer, the man who still wants power, who rules by diktat, starts to get that mental software to shift thinking and align to what we know is right. It's a no-brainer. We should be co-participating, co-carrying responsibility. I hope we start to see that shift. And I think that in my lifetime, I know I will.
I think so too. And it is really, I really enjoy this conversation because, believe it or not, we are also having it in Austria. And I don't know whether you have this Mother's Day in Uganda. Do you have this? In Austria, it was last Sunday. It was Mother's Day.
Yes.
And it's a big commercial thing.
And
I read in an Austrian newspaper a very interesting comment at the occasion of Mother's Day. They said, if you want to provide something nice on Mother's Day to your wife, then don't give her chocolate or flowers, but allow her and enable her, it's less allowing than enable her to have more hours of paid work. Because in the long run, this helps the family, it helps herself, it keeps her independent, it adds to the funding that you need if you have children. And when you retire, you also get something when you have worked. When you don't have worked, you don't get anything. And then the whole power game that is part of also the good marriages, I would say, there is a certain package that I would call power game. It's not so... I don't mean it that negative, how I say it, maybe. I'm not a native speaker. But there is a sort of power game in every relationship.
It's
a different game if both are not only equal by right, but also equal by sharing the resources, right? I mean, it's not rocket science.
And for me, that's, I mean, the statement you make, Andrea, here, for me, is quite powerful. I mean, as an African man, with all the gender dynamics I'm immersed in, to hear that our peers on that side of the world also are faced with some of the same issues we do is an opportunity for co-learning, co-sharing. It's like, you see, this is
absolutely
something the world is dealing with.
Apollo, after 35 years, I'm not even daring to say it, but I shared it many times, after 35 years in international cooperation and development, I would say that the biggest achievement is to acknowledge that our problems globally get more and more the same. It's not like when I started 35 years ago, it was in Ethiopia and this was Austria and big. Yes, there are still differences in level of wealth, of course, and income. But the topics we discuss, impact of climate change, gender equality, how we deal with pandemics, all these things, how we do our economy together in a reasonable way, this is more and more the same, honestly. So, maybe we could have a nice discussion on that on the next World Women's Day.
Yes, equalizing.
Man, I could invite my husband, even he's retired, and he says, it's quite nice to be at home sometimes.
I know, you see, so the equalizing
retired,
world.
Yeah. No. So, but back to serious. There are serious problems still with gender equality in African countries and in many European countries. It's not by incidence that the Nordic countries are really much more advanced in gender equality than Central Europe. That's a fact. Mm. That's not a belief. That's a fact. So. Going back to your setting now, here in Europe, we tend always to have this super example of Rwanda. Everything is super in Rwanda from the outside because they have more than 50% women in parliament. They are very advanced technological-wise. So if you compare, because Rwanda is very close to Uganda, is there still a gap or is it quite similar now in both countries? What would you say? The level of equality and access to education and digitalization. Is it still more advanced in Rwanda?
Let me qualify my answer here straight away that I was privileged to have worked as a country director in CARE Rwanda, under CARE. So I can do a quite fair comparison of the two contexts. So let me say, in terms of the frameworks that define all these issues you're talking about, gender, if you're looking at gender, Resolution 1325, Women, Peace and Security, if you're talking about digitalization, the superhighway for achieving that in our countries, if you're talking about education, the frameworks in both countries, the legal frameworks, the constitutional frameworks, are almost the same. And I think Rwanda has taken a lot in a good way, initially from Uganda, but also now increasingly from the world in terms of the frameworks, and also now becoming quite creative in their own way. It's come to maturity as a nation state, if I may say very carefully. So in terms of the books and what is written, we are almost at par. In terms of execution, in terms of follow through, in terms of action on the ground, I think Rwanda, in all fairness, is ahead of Uganda. And we see that. I can give you some very quick examples of this. If we look at women employment, women rights, as members of the UN body, the global UN body, we all have to align to Resolution 1325, for example. But Rwanda has added those extras to its menu of gender. So they've signed the International Labour Organization Protocol on equal pay for women. I know that until the other day, Uganda hadn't yet endorsed that. So you can just see they're a little bit ahead of us there. In terms of their education, even when I was there as a country director, they were already thinking of digitalizing classrooms, early years and infant education. They were already speaking to philanthropy houses in the Western world, Bill and Melinda Gates, Microsoft. They were already talking about those high-end partnerships to bring what they didn't have in their countries to go to the next level. And when you look at the education, it's up and coming. I'm not saying Uganda is bad, but they're ahead of us. So I think the answer to that question is, in terms of our legal frameworks, our development frameworks, we're at par. They are more innovative, they are more ambitious, so they will very easily get ahead of us for sure if we don't put our house in order. But we are at par there. Uganda is also pretty good in that space. Our policy frameworks, our thinking is great. Execution, Rwanda is ahead of us, as I've just given shared in those two examples. And increasingly, as a Ugandan, I would say we had better be keen to keep the pace with them. So we move together, learn from them, and ensure we are not left behind. If we don't act, they are starting to leave us behind on those issues.
I had a good reason to ask you, not because I knew that you were also country director in Rwanda, but together we are working in one quite big project. It's yes, the so-called yes. framework yeah. treaty of the Austrian government, yeah. Together with the Austrian Development Agency. For years, we had this highly appreciated partnership, and this round, which runs another 3 years, if I'm correct, we do together Rwanda, Uganda, and CARE Austria, and the center, and you mentioned it, I'm not sure if all our listeners know what we are talking about when we comment on the UN Resolution 1325. It's about women, peace, and security. Mm-hmm. And to say it very simple, it's about the involvement of women in post-conflict areas when it comes to their rights, when it comes how they can generate incomes, but also what is their contribution to peace-building processes, to have also women who are, it's not because it's CARE that we are saying women and children are suffering the most in an armed conflict. They are, as a matter of fact. And as another matter of fact, they are not sitting at the peace negotiation tables on a regular basis. So this is in simple words what Resolution 1325 is about. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Spot on. Thank you very much.
And this is the core of our so-called framework treaty. I'm not willing to call a project anymore. This is a very technical term. I would say it's a super opportunity for us for international cooperation, and also a very good opportunity for us to learn from each other. And how would you explain to an outsider and the people who are listening to us, they are not CARE staff, but people outside CARE, what is our cooperation, our international cooperation about? What are the main pillars of the framework treaty, like it is called in technical words?
Yeah, no, thank you very much, Andrea. So let me quickly speak first to what it brings to us. I mean, and I know this podcast will be heard by people also on this side of the world.
I hope so.
So yeah, no, absolutely, I do follow it, and many do. So the framework agreement for me brings a legal foundation for governing the very generous and quite focused aid package, support package, I think would be the better word, that we get from the Austrian people. So it's setting the rules of engagement, how programs are designed, how projects are designed, how financing is met, how it is managed, how it is reported on, and how it is monitored. To every project you do, there is a monitoring aspect, because what do you want to do without achieving impact? So there is that framing on one side. But on to your question, Andrea, in terms of the things that we are looking at for our ADA framework agreement, there is one on, as you may expect for CARE, positive gender norms. Matters around gender, and your conversation started right there, Andrea. The second one is dignified employment, and we've used the word resilience, ensuring that these women, especially women, young girls or youthful girls, but also men and boys are being engaged, ensuring that they are resilient, especially post-conflict. They can cope with the shocks and vulnerabilities that life has thrown at them as a people. And then the third element there is voice and leadership. Of course, if you're talking about women, if you're talking about empowerment, there has to be voice. There has to be something that brings these women to the table, and that's voice. And in voice, you get things like leadership. So, Andrea, the GIA program that you mentioned, the Gender Equality and Resilience Program that is funded by this framework agreement, is addressing these core issues for the next 3 to 4 years. And you have been doing that. The Austrian taxpayer has been doing that in Uganda for the last many years. We just funded the WERE program before this and another program before that. So you can't imagine where we place in terms of value the ADA framework and the support it has brought to my people, to myself and people of Uganda and Rwanda, if I may speak for Rwanda here.
You should even speak for Rwanda here too. And it really touches me because I'm not only a long-standing and very passionate care staffer, I'm also an Austrian taxpayer. And I think that it's very good that my people and my country is so much into this topic. I think the reason for it might also be that we are also a very traditional and also somehow culture-driven, whatever culture means. I'm an anthropologist, whatever culture means. A very culture-driven society, and we have lots of conversations on these topics too. And as I said, when I had the chance to do a podcast with the ambassador of Sweden to Austria and Slovakia, and if you talk to a Swedish woman, you really feel a bit awkward as an Austrian, because they are so much more advanced than we are in many of these gender things, that they even don't need to debate it any longer. And here we need to debate it a lot. So I think I think Uganda and Austria, we have a lot in common, to be honest. I'm not saying that because we are doing the podcast now together, but as a matter of fact, your former president Museveni, he spent in his student days some time in Austria. Mm-hmm. So there are many links, and also I think some ways also how we look at this misty world of culture. I call it the misty world of culture because culture is super dynamic, and we adjust it as we need it, I would say. And I think this is also very true in many of the countries that we are working in, right?
Yes, it is.
I don't want to offend nobody. I said that for Austria. I don't want to be offensive, but somehow the culture argument is also a killing argument for everything, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's the thing that is everywhere, that at times is not seen and recognized by many until it's eaten you all. It follows us everywhere. And as you start mixing cultures, then you start coming up with variants of culture that take you places that you may not have ever wanted to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And it has a lot to do with beliefs. And I think when beliefs meet fact, then change can happen, right?
Yes.
But of course, you have to be educated to recognize what is belief and what is fact, right?
Exactly. And also accept that the things are never cast in stone, that for change to happen, there has to be shifts inside you, and acceptance that it's a give and take. You have to give up on certain things. At times, culture that is grounded in the way culture is grounded can be very unletting go of going. They just don't want to let go. And when you do that, then we don't see change. But yes, education then helps us to learn that you just have to let go. And when you let go based on facts, you start to make that progress that is at times elusive.
So you see, dear listeners, what an interesting debate this is today. So let us ask our guest, how do you measure achievements? Because sometimes we ask in care, how do you measure success? I wouldn't even call it a success. I would call it achievements, because success always depends on who is looking at what. And I think it's more an achievement. If it's transformative in a society, it should be an achievement. And it's not an outsider who should talk about, is this a success or not? You should judge whether this is or not. But how do you measure achievements in such a comprehensive gender project? How is that done?
So I've always, we in development, we can always choose to go complexity, PhD thinking, or just align it to the Ugandan way, and I'll align it the Ugandan way because that's the reality we deal with. So for me, Andrea, poverty and the drivers of poverty, like gender discrimination, intimate partner violence, and all the things we see, is a mind issue. It's a mindset. It's the head, it's the brain. And every time I want to say we've achieved impact, especially in the gender space, I look for behavior change. I look for a shift in the way we do what we've been doing. So if I've been beating my wife and I stand up in a community somewhere, in a social gathering somewhere, and I say, I have stopped beating Lillian, my wife, and these are the reasons I've done that. For me, that is impact. Because there is a mental shift in a driver of a behavior that is raising issues that keep us baffled. So when we speak gender, when we are looking for impact here, we start from, are we seeing behavior change? And when we see behavior change, then you follow through on that continuum. What outcomes are we seeing on the other side? No beating, harmony, dialogue, giving voice. And when you do that, then you start to see, what are we seeing in terms of transformation at the household level? Progress, increased income. The woman is having voice. And women, by the way, Andrea, as we all know, I think are better business people than men like me overall. So every time there is harmony in that space, you also start to see wellness, development. Things start to go translating into improved income, improved living outcomes, and the chain continues. So for me, the answer to your question, in a very Ugandan-based way, but one that aligns to the projects we are doing, is a shift in behavior. I think that's where we begin always. And when I share, Andrea, in communities, I do a lot of speaking here as a country director. I always say, one of the things we need to be looking at, in addition to dealing with youthful women, girls, and men and boys, we should be targeting education at an early stage and impact, imbue certain ways of thinking, behavior in our wonderful children, girls and boys, when they're still young, that by the time they're hitting society and having an impact, their behavior having a real impact on how society then moves and lives, they're already programmed right, if I may use the word program very carefully. Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely right. And we also debate that a lot in our own society, that early childhood decides about so many things. Yeah. That you really have to be cautious what you teach your toddler at home, because there the seed is already there, how they behave later on. I would like, without any offense, honestly, I would like to ask you a provocative question.
Go ahead.
I was asked when I talked about the change in the project we are talking now, how do you make sure that a man who beats his wife is something, it's also a problem in many European countries. And we know that it is in all parts of society. It is not only connected to poverty. It is also connected to poverty, but it takes place also in wealthy families. And if this man, after the program, goes to his peers in a village in Uganda and says, I beat my wife, now I've stopped it, and she's now happier and she's nicer and she can work better now. What makes us believe that he is not, this applies to every participant in such a program, but what assures us that people are not telling us what they think we want to hear in order to be happy with what was introduced in a village somewhere, not only in Uganda? Is that really something that changes that easily?
The honest answer, Andrea, is no. It doesn't change easily. But because it doesn't change easily, it doesn't mean it can never change. So I've seen examples of men in this country and in Rwanda, where I worked before, and other African countries, East Africa countries I've worked, where men have changed. And the from my own analysis, but also the project work we've done, because the things have been driven by project, it's always a process and a persistent process of working with this man through a series of engagements and shifting them from a point of being stuck into his thinking to starting to gradually unlock, to fully unlocking, and accepting that along that journey, Andrea, there are men who will unlock 50%, so become better at what they've been doing, but still do it. And there are those who will go all the way. Those who go all the way will have consistently worked with a process of transformation. I'm yet to see a case where an Apollo like me or anyone else just wakes up a man and says, I've now changed. And there is a process of support. And I relate this, Andrea, to in the Western world, maybe more even in countries like the US, there is a whole profession around psychology, counseling, and supporting. We don't necessarily have the exact same thing here, but we have the equivalent in these social dialogues we have. And it's those social dialogues that have transformed certain human beings. So where I've seen men change, they have really changed. But the truth is, it's a long journey. It has to be very carefully managed, and it can't be a one bang and you're done approach, because you're changing culture that is deeply ingrained. And there are those you change today, and they change, and they go back and see other people behaving regressively, and they go, oh, that's where I belong. Maybe let me go back here. So the peer pressure, the peer influence. But the truth is, change has happened. Change has happened. And where, finally, on this question, Andrea, where there are proper monitoring systems, the world has gone digital. The technology is there for us to be able to track, monitor, and present authentic outcomes of an intervention that would be very difficult to tamper with. And this is improving by the day. So my answer would be, even where there are those, because we are not a perfect world, even where there are cases of presenting things others want to hear, that could not be done for long anymore. Because systems are getting better and better at monitoring authenticity for results.
And this is also the reason why we need rounds and rounds of this project, because it's a long journey people have to take, right? Because you mentioned it previous in our conversation that there were so many rounds of this framework treaty, and I really want to pre-answer everybody who listens to that. Yeah, after years and years, this is the result. Yes, because think about yourself, how long it takes to change a habit, any habit. It takes enormously long. And I think it is not only refreshing, it's also, it gives us a lot of peace of mind to hear and see how comprehensive the monitoring is and how many highly educated people make sure that change really happens. I want to tackle also the question of transformation, because this is something that is, I never use it, never, that care transforms lives. Because I'm getting afraid when somebody would tell me, with all the best intent, I come and I transform your life. I would really be frightened. So if you use transforming lives as a Ugandan in Uganda, then you mean that Uganda is transforming its own society, correct?
I mean,
not Austria or the people of Austria or the Austrian Development Agency who comes and says, let's transform Uganda. Never ever we would do or even think such thing. If you hear transformation in the context of care, it's always the people itself who transform, because nobody else can transform you in a reasonable way. Am I right? Or
Absolutely.
Am I exaggerating?
No. You're very right, Andrea. And let me quickly add to that. Even if you wanted to transform me as if I were the traditional village, rural Ugandan man, you can't. It would be wishful thinking. You cannot transform me. What you can do is to bring enablers to a process that is owned and run by me, us as Ugandans, to help us move from point A to point B. So this wonderful support we get, is enablement. You are accompanying that journey To be honest, if it weren't there, would we be on that journey? We would be, but wouldn't be as effective in talking about some of the things I've talked about, spoken to here. But you don't know, this is done by us. There is agents here. I mean, right in front of you, Andrea, this is an international organization, CARES. We know CARES, Tria Confederation. I'm sitting in Kampala, the capital city of Uganda. We run this organization here. I am very Ugandan, as you can hear me. The team here, 100% of the Uganda organization here, CARE International in Uganda, CARE Uganda, is Ugandan. Plugging into the global space of the CARE Confederation is an ecosystem where agencies like yours, agencies like ADA, are playing an enabling role in helping us achieve what we want to achieve, but never you coming here and saying you can transform us. No, I think that's not what happens here.
It's good that we talked about it, because many things are easily said, easily perceived, and they are done in a very different way. So I wanted to be very clear on this point, that we as CARE, we don't transform nobody. Transformation might happen in a society by the society itself, but it's not our approach. Never.
Thank you. I'm happy that you've tabled that.
We have to come to an end. And yes, it was a positive conversation, so I need not remind us to end on a positive tone. But what would you like to share as a Ugandan man with the listeners of the CARE in Action podcasts, and also many people in Austria and all the listeners that we have? What is your call out from Uganda to us?
I think to the Austrian taxpayer first, including yourself, Andrea, you pay tax in your country. A big thank you for the enablement you've brought into this ecosystem that is taking Uganda, my people, from point A to point B. And a call to saying the things are not big bang approaches of 4 years, like I would run a government here and say, I've come with a political agenda. It's year 1, 2, 3, fun, we are done. Change is long term. We are talking about norms. We are talking about culture. Don't get tired. Feedback should come. Necessary changes to make programs more effective should be on the table. But accompaniment is a long game. So the call out to the taxpayer is, thankful for the support we may need. I think the team needs, the group, the ecosystem needs a few more years of accompaniment for us to continue to build on the already good results we are seeing. To the wider community, Andrea, where I also belong, development community, well-wishers, people who wish this sector well, here in Uganda, but also globally. We are dealing with very interesting times as a sector. And at times you wake up thinking, I've had people asking the question, are we relevant? Are we needed? Are we necessary? We've never been, in my humble opinion, as relevant as needed as we are today. Let's not mix the need to change the way we work, the need to change how we move. We may move from using vehicles, Andrea, to using a public train, if I use that analogy. But it doesn't mean that you'll stop using a means of transport to go from point A to point B. So we may want to look at the way we work, and we already are, but the need for development, humanitarian support, especially in a refugee-laden Uganda where I live, has never been as abundant, as much needed as it is today. I just wanted to end on that call, reminding the world that people still need support. Thank you, Andrea. It's been a pleasure talking to you as ever.
Absolutely. And I can assure you that CARE Austria wants to stay your appreciated partner, and we are looking forward with interest and joy to working together with many, many more years with CARE Uganda. Yeah, Apollo, thank you so much for being such a nice colleague, and you were a fabulous podcast guest. Dear listeners, I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. And yeah, I'm really happy and eager to meet you next week when we present another episode of Care in Action. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening. This was Care in Action, the podcast by Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager. For more information about Care and our projects, visit care.at. There you'll also find out how you can support our work. This podcast is made possible with the generous support of CC Real. Thank you for your commitment, which enables this series of conversations. See you next time.